Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in. Last week, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute presented a film screening of Clinkett Macbeth during 2024's celebration festivities. The production reimagined Shakespeare's 400-year-old play by infusing elements of Tlingit language and culture. KTOO's Anna Canny attended the screening and has the story.
A hush falls over the theater at Juno's Gold Town Nick as a blood-splattered form-line title card appears on the screen. It reads, Macbeth Through Alaskan Eyes. Drums mark the entrance of the three witches. They dance and slink across the stage wearing masks that show the barred teeth of a shape-shifting otter from Tlingit folklore. As flashing lights evoke the stormy night that sets the play's murderous plot in motion, the first witch delivers a line in Tlingit. When shall we three meet again? In thunder, lightning, or in rain? That line opens every performance of Macbeth. But the translation, and the elements of Tlingit culture throughout this version, put a twist on Shakespeare's tragedy. The production first ran as a stage performance at Juno's Perseverance Theater in the early 2000s. It even had a 2007 run at the Smithsonian Museum of the American Indian.
I remember going in the subways in D.C., speaking our lines together on the subway, in packed subways, and it was like just to be in our nation's capital, speaking our language around the city. It was just a powerful experience to just feel like we were claiming the play.
That's Jake Waite, who played Macbeth and attended the film screening. Videos of the play were captured during those DC performances, but for years the footage was lost to the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's archives. Now it's finally reached the big screen as a film presented for 2024's celebration. Director Anita Maynard-Losh came up with the play after spending more than a decade living in Southeast Alaska. She's not Alaska native herself, but the Shakespeare expert said she saw similarities between Tlingit culture and the Scottish values portrayed in the play. She said those went beyond both people's fearsome reputations as warriors.
They had a deep connection with the supernatural, and they had a cultural value of putting the good of the group before the good of any one individual.
Most of the characters deliver their lines in Tlingit, with translations done by the late elder Johnny Marks. But some of the play, including most of the soliloquies, is in English. Maynard-Losh says that partial translation was intentional.
We decided that we were going to lean into the metaphor by having the people who were adhering to that cultural value speak in Tlingit. And when the people were not adhering to that value and going for personal ambition, they spoke in English.
Doing the rest in Tlingit was a challenge. Though all the actors are Alaska Native, and many of them are Tlingit, none were fluent speakers. Waite says watching his performance brought back memories of rehearsing the difficult lines over and over again with his castmates.
It feels like a miracle that we got up on stage and we got the words out.
The play also incorporates cultural elements beyond language. The costume and set feature form-line designs. When Macbeth is crowned king, he dons a raven's tail robe and a headdress adorned with ermine skins. And when the righteous Macduff finally vanquishes Macbeth, they face off with shields that are drums and swords that are drumsticks, punctuating each blow. For Waite, all those elements enhance the play for new audiences and actors without changing Macbeth's core meaning.
We were just doing Macbeth. Shakespeare's Macbeth. Why not? You know, it's one of the great plays in the English language. This is part of our history, too, as English speakers, right? Also as people who want to dig deeper into our own culture and find meaning. We're not relegated to just what people might think of as Tlingit things.
Sea Alaska Heritage Institute said they're hoping to screen the film again later this summer. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
And the federal government is considering a request that would grant Gulf of Alaska King Salmon Endangered Species Act protections. The National Marine Fisheries Service recently found that the petition by the Washington-based conservation group Wild Fish Conservancy, which says that the species are under threat, warrants further scientific review. It's just the first major step in a long regulatory process, but many say it could have far-reaching implications. KFSK's Shelby Herbert took a look at what that listing might mean for people across the state.
Mark Roberts is docked in Petersburg, getting his fishing boat ready for the July 1st King Salmon Opener. Roberts has fished in the Gulf of Alaska for about 30 years, but he came very close to skipping the whole summer season last year when the Wild Fish Conservancy sued the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to halt commercial trolling for kings in southeast Alaska. A federal appeals court issued a stay on the lawsuit, keeping the fishery open.
I was basically ready to tie my boat up to the dock and not fish until August. But once they announced it, boy, I started my engine and took off and went fishing. And I was very grateful about it.
That lawsuit is ongoing. But now, Roberts is staring down the barrel of another move against king salmon fishing by the same group, which filed a petition to list the fish with Endangered Species Act protections in January. NOAA announced it would move forward with its regulatory process for considering the request in late May. The request could have a huge impact on how Alaskans fish across the entire Gulf. The petition asks for protections for an area more than 1,000 miles wide, or just a little longer than the distance from New York City to Orlando, Florida. Roberts says it feels like another attack on his fishery, which he considers to be low impact and sustainably managed.
Because I want the salmon to come back too. So it really surprises me that these people are coming after us when we've already are doing things to bring back the salmon instead of just shutting everybody down, because this will hurt everybody. So it really surprises me that they're coming after us like they are.
But Emma Helverson, the director of the Wild Fish Conservancy, says it's not personal. She says the petition folds in feedback from a lot of people across the state who are afraid the resource won't be around for future generations.
People throughout the state who maybe aren't even sure how they feel about Endangered Species Act protections, but they're seeing these problems and they know something has to change. They know we need solutions. And actually, the day before we submitted our petition, I got a voicemail from an Alaskan saying, hey, we got to list these fish because I'm seeing these fish disappear before my eyes.
Helverson has heard from Alaskans like Willard Lind. He's a citizen of the Chignik Lake Tribe, and he's lived next to the Chignik River on the Alaska Peninsula for all of his 63 years.
When I was a kid, there's a place we call shallow water in the river. The place used to be loaded with kings, man, holy cow. It'd be swimming all over the place. But nowadays, you don't see one king in that shallow water hole anymore. I'm all for this petition, whatever you call it, to stop these kingfishers, but I hope it goes through, you know.
Salmon runs collapsed on the Chignik in 2018. Sockeye salmon have slowly been returning to the river, but kings are still scarce. Lind says he wants fishing for kings to stop, even in southeast Alaska, hundreds of miles away. Not all conservation groups are on board with the Wild Fish Conservancy's request, however. For instance, the Alaska-based environmental group Salmon State has come out against it. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has also been one of the petition's loudest critics. Fish and Game manages all king salmon stocks in the state. Doug Vincent Lang is the department's commissioner.
It was really, of all the petitions I've ever seen come in for a listing of a species, that was by far the most poorly written petition I've ever seen.
And the National Marine Fisheries Service did note in its findings that while the petition included numerous factual errors and unsupported conclusions, the numbers were concerning. Vincent Lang says that if the petition is pushed through, it would effectively federalize management of king salmon as a resource in Alaska.
This is fairly far-reaching implications in terms of how king salmon could potentially be managed into the future.
The Wild Fish Conservancy acknowledges the criticism lobbed against their petition, but Helverson, the Wild Fish Conservancy director, says that, regardless, the process will generate data that could lead to important localized recovery for king salmon. But it's likely that if Alaska's kings do make the list, the protections would be applied in a piecemeal fashion in specific places across the Gulf. The National Marine Fisheries Service's findings will set off a more rigorous scientific review. The public has until July 23rd to share their thoughts on the potential endangered species listing. Reporting with Jack Darrell in Ketchikan, I'm Shelby Herbert in Petersburg.
This is KTOO.